Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio, the podcast for progressive agency owners and web professionals. Season 3 is focused on the growing number of agencies who are making the world a better place. We explore what this even means. Why is it different from any other agency? And how can it be reconciled with the real-world challenges of running a profitable agency? Join your host, Barry O'Kane, as he speaks to leaders of agencies who are driven by their values to positively impact the world around them.
Welcome back to Season 3. This season has been a real personal journey for me. In my own agency, we're struggling with many of the challenges described by my amazing guests. It is so cool to feel a real connection when I hear their stories and their insights. And it is both inspiring and encouraging to see what these folks are doing in our industry. My guest this week is another amazing example of this. Ben is a co-founder of Montfort.io, who are a digital communications, social media, and content marketing agency for people who change the world for good, based in London. Ben shares their story from freelancing to agency and how important their values were, not just in terms of the clients they focus on, but also to ensuring the quality of the work itself. At the end of our conversation, he also describes his vision for the future of Montfort, and I really resonated personally with what he says. This season, we've heard from so many different types and sizes of agencies, each with their own story and vision for the future, and I'd love to hear which of these resonated most with you. So please do reach out on Twitter or via happyporchradio.com. I'm really keen to hear your questions and your feedback. But now, let's meet Ben.
Hello, I'm Ben Matthews. I'm a digital marketing consultant specializing in charities, not-for-profits, tech for good, healthcare, sustainability, anything basically that gives a positive change to the world. And I run an agency called Montfort. Montfort set up 4 years ago. We're now a team of seven. We do work for the likes of Amnesty International, Global Witness, the Green Party, the Wildlife Trust, UN Refugee Agency, quite varied clients, but all specialising in the charity sector.
Very cool. And thank you so much for joining me for season 3 of the podcast. I wanted to start and talk a little bit about where Montfort came from and why you've sort of specialised, or why you chose this as your focus.
Sure. So there's two of us who run it. It's my wife and I, actually. My wife is Jazz Cummins, and we both started out as freelancers. So after doing agency world in London for quite a bit, we decided to go it alone. Jazz had worked her way from PR agencies through to big media agencies like Mindshare, and eventually she landed a job at Amnesty. So she built up her experience in agency, but went across to an in-house charity role. So she's seen both sides of the coin, and then now is freelance and picked up UNHCR, UN Refugee Agency, as one of her first clients. And she's been working with them ever since, which has been great. Same for me. I was freelance, but doing a bit more varied work. So I'd worked through a lot of tech PR agencies and digital agencies. And then I went freelance, and my first client was London 2012 Olympics, which was really good brand to have on the portfolio. From there, we both started specializing more and more in charities. And then we got increasingly busy. People liked our work. We were having trouble keeping up with demand, and we kept getting some really nice projects come our way, but had to turn them away because we were too busy. And it came to a straw about 4 years ago where we were getting these lovely, lovely clients approach us. And we just decided we're not going to turn any more away. We're going to start building, I guess, from a freelancer basis into more of a small agency, more of a studio, I guess. So we tried out a few contractors and had them working for us just on individual projects. And we actually found that when you work with contractors, they're great at delivering that work, but you don't get the continuity you perhaps need. And it's a very kind of delivery-focused relationship. You don't build a relationship or a team as such. So what we eventually started doing was hiring. So we made our first hire 2 years ago, and we've made a hire every 6 months since then. And now we have a nice team that we work with across multiple projects in the traditional agency manner, and have a great culture, great clients, and we're very happy being a small boutique studio.
Yeah, well, that's really awesome. One of the things that I find interesting about that is the agency kind of happened, but the focus on charities and the however you define the good part, that happened first. Was that a very conscious decision? As you said, you sort of started to do work more and more with those clients in your both of your freelance careers. Or is that something that just kind of happened and then that you kind of went with as it happened?
I think it was a bit of both, but mainly planned for. I think both Jazz and I really like working with charities or not-for-profits or even for-profit companies that have some social impact built into them. We find that aligning our personal values with the values of our clients means that we can actually deliver higher quality work. The times where we have worked with purely profit-based companies, we find that we're not as motivated, perhaps the quality of the work is not as good, and we generally are not as interested in the overall project. And when you run an agency, you are a freelancer, the work is such a big part of your life that we feel that working with companies that align with your values is a lot better. I mean, you're going to enjoy your work a lot more. And in the long run, that's going to lead to a much more happier business, much more sustainable business. And I think that shows in the work we do. I think we do better work for our clients because of that as well.
Mm, yeah, that's definitely, I echo that experience. And that's a theme that keeps coming up in the conversations I'm having in the season. It's really interesting. Do you have a clear definition of, or like criteria for the people and the projects that you work on? As a sort of follow-up to that, are you saying no to other things?
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the other people you've spoken to have said the same. But when you first start out, you say yes a lot more than you say no. You know, you look at that monthly revenue and you need clients coming through the door in order to make that work. So you tend to take on projects that maybe aren't 100% in where you'd like to be, but they do serve a purpose and that they give you revenue, give you experience, give you case studies, for example. So they're worth taking on. As time's gone on for us, more and more, we have a set list of criteria where clients have to fit, otherwise we won't take them on. And it becomes a lot easier to say no when you have a nice portfolio of clients working with you month in, month out, and taking on extra projects is not a luxury, but you know, you can take and leave it. You can feel confident and say, no, this won't work for us. That's also based a bit on experience as well. For instance, we've worked with a few startups and entrepreneurs, and they are sometimes difficult to work with, mainly because they don't have lots of budget, which is an issue, first of all, because they can't afford much of your time. But then their expectations are high as well. You know, these startups and entrepreneurs are making amazing things happen on extremely limited resources. You know, that's the whole definition of a startup. And so when they come to pay for an agency's time, who are perhaps more expensive than the way they've used to before, and also they expect a lot more out of an agency than sometimes an agency can deliver on the budget that you've been given. So we find that working with startups and entrepreneurs is a bit more difficult, so tend to shy away from those. That also becomes a time when you kind of do realize you need a minimum budget for a project in order for it to work. You know, if the budget's too low, then essentially you don't put time into it or prioritize it enough, and the client might not value it enough either, or see the value out of it that they expect. So, you know, we set a minimum criteria for budget as well. And then generally the person that we're going to be working with, so, you know, you might be a great charity with a big name that we really want to work for, but if the person sitting opposite the table and the person we're working with isn't nice or isn't great to work with, then we can quite easily say no to that as well. And you generally get that sense from them as you start having those initial calls. So I think they're our main criteria, and we form them over the years just based on experience. And now we're in a really good place where we can start to strictly enforce that. And means, again, we're taking on great clients, doing great work, and our team is really happy.
Mm, yeah. So you touched on a couple of things which I think are fundamental, actually, is sort of understanding the budget and understanding the type of client. How different is that decision-making process for you when you're also trying to, as you described it, align your values?
I think you take it on a case-by-case basis. So depending on what project comes forward, we look at it, and sometimes it's immediately obvious it's not the right fit. Sometimes it's immediately obvious it is the right fit. And then the other times, you generally try and get on a call with the client, talk through the brief, talk through what they're trying to get out of the project. And then just by literally connecting on a human level, just speaking to them, you kind of get a better understanding about what it's going to be like. And I think when we get those situations where we're not sure, we'll generally just have to make a call on a case-by-case basis. It's worked so far, and generally the feeling you get at the start of the project is generally right, that kind of gut feel. So it's good to trust that.
And one of the other things that I think that segues neatly into, one of the other things that I've been asking most of the guests in this season is, How often, or in the early days even, did you see a conflict between the sort of values matching part and the impact part and needing to be commercially, as you described, like paying the bills for that month and having sustainability moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, because we're an agency and we do digital marketing for people, the impact is normally on the client side. So they'll be demonstrating the impact to funders and supporters. So for us, we can demonstrate impacts in a normal digital marketing sense. So traffic, conversions, leads, whatever, or donations, whatever the client wants. But in terms of demonstrating social impacts, because we're a bit removed from that, we don't really look into that ourselves. So I guess less of an issue for us. Yeah, and in terms of the early days of aligning our values and paying the bills, you know, we didn't have pure non-profit or social impact-based clients. We did have some commercial for-profit clients who were great to work with, and we did good work for them. We put a lot into it because we liked those companies, but I wouldn't say that we would always take those on from now on. Now we're in a more comfortable position. We're looking much more at the kind of purpose-led organizations. And, you know, for other people just starting out, I would not expect, or say, don't expect to just take on those dream clients straight away. This is not going to happen. You're new, not established. You might have to do some work that you don't always agree with, or the clients that you're not 100% happy with. But that's a great opportunity to learn, to check what works. You can try new stuff out. And then when you do get those dream clients come your way, you can, well, you're better prepared. You know what your strengths are. You know how to deliver projects better. You generally are in a much more strong position to deliver excellent work to those clients that you really like. And then it snowballs from there. You keep getting good projects come through the door.
Has your own definition of the dream client changed over that time period as the agency's matured?
Yeah. So Jazz is my co-director, is great establishing the list of dream clients. I think she's very clear about who she likes to work for and what she wants. I'm less clear. I was more happy to just see what comes our way, really, and see what comes in. But I am well aware that having a list of clients that you'd love to work for is a really strong motivator and gives you focus and even makes you kind of think about how to reach out to that client, how to build a relationship, how to initiate that project with them. So myself, I need to think more about my own personal criteria. What are the kind of projects I love? Who do I want to work for? And I think that's a bit of a luxury position to be in if you can work with those people. But it's still really helpful to have that list of dream clients. Maybe after this recording, I'll go away and come up with that dream list.
So just going back a little bit to the journey you described there. So you started to build up momentum with the freelance stuff and you've realized that you would like to do more work than you have the capacity to do. So the decision then to set up an agency, or did you decide to set up an agency? Was it like a very sort of switch decision like that? Was it a gradual process with the contracting thing? Were you trying a different model? Or, you know, what was that part of the journey like?
It's definitely been organic growth. It hasn't been designed as a formal agency from the start. So yeah, when we realized we were too busy as freelancers but wanted to keep on these projects, we took on one person initially. So they took a lot of the overflow work that we had on, maybe a bit more of the tasks where you need less experience. And that helped us understand how to work best with contractors or other freelancers, how best to manage a small team. And that worked really well because obviously we hired again. So about 6 months later, we got a second team member. And again, then the dynamic changed a bit more. So rather than just Jazz and I briefing in this one freelancer working with her, we then had a place where we were working in different project teams. So, you know, two of us might be working on this project and the other two would be working on another project, and we didn't cross. So then you get into things like there's client activity going on that you're not aware of. Things like knowledge sharing comes into play. How do you make the most efficient use of processes across each project, even though you're not necessarily working on that? And then I guess building a bit of a culture, a bit of team building culture for the agency, as it were. So who are Montfort? What do we stand for? What are our values? What are our processes? And what do we look for in the people we work with? So that all started to have to be defined as well. So I imagine if you formally started out an agency and had that in mind from the beginning, you might well have this, all these kind of things nailed down as you go, or at least you're well aware that you need them. For us growing organically, we've realized that we need to kind of solidify those aspects of our company. Now we're up to, you know, 6-7 people. Whenever we hire someone, we just hired someone a couple of weeks ago, we can onboard them in a much stronger way. We know a lot more about what we stand for. We know a lot more about what we want from our employees. And once they're onboarded, we can get them up to speed a lot quicker, get them onto the client accounts a lot quicker, and generally create a much more, I guess, stronger working environment for the people who work with us.
What was the toughest part of that process of going from freelance to building the team structure?
For me, I can't speak to Jazz, but for me, it's remembering that your work doesn't always come first. You know, we had to make sure that our teams knew what they were doing, had enough to do, and were clear on the kind of quality and process that we wanted. So it's making sure that the accounts are running well, that all tasks are noted down. So we use Asana for our task management, and just making sure that all kind of project briefs and task briefs go into there. Yeah, and just generally making sure that the people we're bringing on kind of understand what Jazz and I see, or we envision for the agency, and making sure that their work meets that as well, and that they align with what we want as well. So I think we just interviewed recently, as I said, and the people who stood out, we could really see aligned with who we are and the way we work. And it got a lot easier to hire people then. When you have a solid understanding of who you are, it gets a lot easier to both hire and actually do the work for clients.
Mm. And how important for that hiring process is the social value, like a match of values?
Oh, I think it's quite natural, well, quite easy for people to say that they like charities. There's a bit more nuance in that, though. So you can say that you like charities, but not necessarily understand how digital works or anything outside of charities. You know, you could be just focused on fundraising, but a lot of work we do is around kind of stakeholder engagement, kind of influence and change at a high level, especially in the sustainability area. So it's not enough just to say you like charities and you've done a fun run. There's a lot more to it, and our clients demand that as well. And you know, one of our recent client testimonials that we got, they said they just loved the way we understood the issues that their sector was facing. And, you know, it's not just liking charities, you need to understand a lot more wider than that about how impact is created.
Yeah, I can see how that is incredibly powerful. And during that interviewing or the selection process, when you're, as you said, you've done it 6 or 7 times now at least, do you have a particular process or way that you find and identify and select and choose these people?
Yeah, well, we quite traditionally just ask for the CV and a covering letter. And in there, we normally ask for 1 or 2 questions that help them stand out a bit. So, for example, we ask them why you want to work with us. Quite simply, if they show passion and show interest or have actually bothered to read our website, it becomes immediately obvious. And then we ask them to point out a few other organizations that they like their marketing. So, and tell us why, give us some examples. And that shows us that they're aware of the industry, what's going on, what is kind of best in class work. And that initial stage actually filters out a lot of the candidates, because you'll be amazed at how many people have bad cover letters or don't customize them to the agency that they're applying for. Or when we ask them why you want to work with us, it's, I love charities, I want the job. And that's not enough to stand out these days. And immediately, if you come across as generic or, you know, not really interested in the work we do, then clearly gone straight away. From there, we move to Skype calls. So Skype is just a great way. And we do it on video as well, because we find that a lot of our calls are done with clients on video conferencing. We find that you can get a really good grasp of someone's manner, professionalism, friendliness by having a video call with them, because that's one of the main ways we communicate with clients. It's important for us to see that, how they communicate there. And then once we've got down to the final two, we'll go for coffee, meet them face to face. They can ask any questions they want, and then make a decision about hiring. So it's a fairly straightforward process, I think. We're only a small agency, so we need to keep that relatively streamlined. And I think we've got a good process. So the last time we did it, from the close of the application deadline to making the offer of hiring someone, I think was 2 weeks. Might have even been a bit quicker than that. So, you know, we're good at getting that done now. And I think it's important for an agency where you're small and every team member has a great impact on the agency. You know, they are delivering a lot of the work and really helping us shape what we do. It's important to get that right. And I think so far we have.
I was laughing when you were talking about how few people or how many people fall at that first hurdle with a terrible cover letter or a generic statement about.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so bad. I mean, everyone must just say to you, customize it. And God, it's amazing how many people don't still.
Just mind blowing. Whole other conversation there, I think. One of the other things that I want to talk about, because looking at your site, there's some really cool clients you've worked with and projects you've worked on. I wanted to get you to maybe choose 1 or 2 of your favorites and just talk a little bit about, you know, what was it like working on that? And especially when earlier when you said about, because you're kind of, it's things you care about, it's in the area of your values. Really interested to see how that, if you can, talk a little bit how that sort of comes out with a specific example.
Yeah, one project we finished just before Christmas, and we're working with them again this year, is called The Great Get Together. And it's an event run by the Joe Cox Foundation. So Joe Cox was the Labour MP who was murdered back in 2016. And out of that tragedy, the foundation was created to continue the work that she believed in. So The Great Get Together is one of those initiatives. And basically, it started as a series of street parties across the UK where communities could come together and basically have a day of fun, eating, drinking, sharing meal stories, meeting their neighbours. And over 9 million people took part last year. We weren't actually involved in that campaign, but we got involved in the Christmas campaign, which was designed to be a way of keeping the energy going between the summer events. So they are running another one this year, another summer event, but they wanted a Christmas campaign as well. So we got involved back in September 2017, and we're basically looking at the whole digital aspect of the campaign, from the website through to email marketing, social media, and video. And that was a fantastic campaign to be involved in, both because they had a lot of learnings from the summer campaign, but the Christmas one was the first time they would do this. And there was lots of other challenges there. So for example, in the summer one, you had nice weather, you had a bit of momentum from people feeling energized by this being the first one. And obviously great uptake on it. 9 million people is amazing in the UK. So Christmas being a lot colder, darker, and obviously a lot noisier with other activities going on around Christmas, it was obviously going to be a lot more difficult and not match the same scale. But we came up with a nice campaign called Mince Pie Moments, which is the idea of sharing mince pies with your neighbours and creating kind of shared moments through that, which was a lovely way to kind of bring people together over the Christmas period. So we updated the website, reskinned it, redesigned it for the Christmas campaign. We created an email marketing program. We were sending out regular emails for them. Social media, we came up with lots of different activities, Facebook Lives, loads of Twitter chats and things like that to make sure that social media was well used. And then as we came down towards the Christmas weekend, because we kind of had a focus point across Christmas itself, the photos and videos and stories of people across the UK taking part in Mince Pie Moments started flooding in. So we were really pleased of both the interest and the energy and the, I guess, impact that we made over this Christmas get together. And working with the client was brilliant as well. And so just, I think the reason I've picked this one out is because it was quite recent, but also it was an end-to-end campaign for us. You know, it's 4 months of starting from scratch, from the very beginning, coming up with the idea, coming up with the concept, planning the four-month campaign, delivering in our areas where we're strong. And then it all kind of came together nicely at Christmas with lots of people across the UK taking part. And we just published a case study to our website. We had a great wrap-up meeting with the client, and we're going to be working with them again for the summer campaign this year. And I think the great get-together for Montfort encapsulates all we've been working towards. And we had a great team, great client, really believed in the work they were doing, really happy with the work we did for them. And it shows both in the results we got and that the client wants to carry on working with us.
And as you say, something that's sort of not just a story of a successful campaign, but something that you obviously are interested and passionate and care about in as well. So kind of closing the full circle. So what about the future? What's next for you and for Montfort?
We are at a stage now where we're very happy with the work we're doing and the team that we've got. And I've been talking to Jazz a lot about this, and I think we're happy at the stage we are. I think a lot of agencies are pressured when they start to see success that they want to keep growing and replicate that success. But I think we both feel that when you try to force growth as an agency, things change, you're less involved, less in control. And I think people perhaps more see it as a job rather than something that's intricate to their lives and that they value. So I think what we're going to do is stay as we are now. We've got a great team. We're doing good work. I don't think we want that pressure of growing it and having the pressure of having lots of employees to make sure that we're giving enough work to and bringing enough work in for. So I think what we're going to see is maybe a better improvement on our processes. Maybe our documentation and kind of knowledge sharing will improve. We can do more internal training and generally just improve, make sure the work that we do for our clients is improving all the time and continue delivering good work. I think as long as we keep doing that, there'll always be work for us, and there's no need to keep growing to deliver profits. It's not what we're interested in. We want to have a nice life and earn enough of that, but yeah, not have that pressure to grow. I think that's a good decision for us, and I think we'll look back and we'll be glad that we didn't force ourselves to grow into, you know, a medium-sized agency.
Do you think a part of that decision to stay at this size is driven by that personal, this is what I want, you know, this is the size of the team, I'm comfortable with everything? Or is it also connected to, could it be a challenge to growing the agency but keeping the values aspect, the purpose-led aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more you grow, the more pressure you have to keep those new clients coming in. And I think you would be forced to take on clients that are outside of what you believe in and what those values are. I wouldn't say that's a bad thing for other agencies, but I would say for us, we deliver the best work we do when we believe in the client's work as well. And for that to happen, we need to make sure that we're comfortable with the size we are and comfortable with the projects we're taking on. So, you know, I don't think we're going to regret it. I don't think we're going to look back in 5 years, 10 years time and go, I really wish we worked twice as hard as we are now to bring in those new projects, you know, because we get to finish at 6 o'clock. We get to have our weekends and we get to enjoy the work we do. I think that's a privilege. You know, we've worked hard to get to this position, but I still understand not everyone has that. Yeah, why not keep it going for as long as you can?
It also sounds like staying personally connected is, you mentioned at the start about the high quality of the work as well, not wanting to just churn things out or factor things out.
Yeah, and I realise when agencies grow, the founder owners are obviously quite involved in the agency work from the beginning. As you grow, you're meant to kind of delegate a bit more and delegate to more junior people, I guess, and you turn into a kind of manager of the business and a new business person. But I still enjoy the work, and Jazz still enjoys the work. We still enjoy working with clients day in, day out. We still enjoy learning new tools, like digital marketing is changing all the time. We still enjoy it, so we're happy to get involved and keep involved. You know, we run the business well. We've got our finances in order and employees are paid well, and we've got HR and finance and all the rest of it sorted. So it's not like because we're founder owners that not everything's set up correctly. It is. So it means we can get involved with the work and enjoy it and not worry about, you know, driving as much profit as possible.
Brilliant. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So I really just wanted to say a huge thank you. That I really appreciate you coming on to the show and sharing all of that.
Thank you, Barry. That was great. It's nice to speak about ourselves a bit. So busy doing the client work. It's nice to take a step back and look back at what we've achieved. And no, it's nice. Thanks.
And just to finish this off, for listeners who want to find out a little bit more about yourself and about Montfort, where can we direct them?
So we're at montfort.io. That's MONTFORT.io. That's our website. It's the same on Twitter. We're Montfort.io. And you can email me if you want. I'm ben@montfort.io.
Brilliant. Thanks again, Ben.
Cool. Thanks, Barry. Cheers.
You can get all the links and notes from this episode on happyporchradio.com, where you can also find out how to send us questions, feedback, and get involved in the conversation about this series. If you enjoyed the show, please share with anyone else who might enjoy it too. Thanks for listening.